Hello there, Coach Kevin here. Before we start today's episode, I want to make a quick announcement. We are giving away to one lucky winner our 6-month Body Reset coaching package. This is our flagship coaching service, and it's a one-on-one personal training and nutrition coaching service. And we're giving one of these away absolutely 100% free, no strings attached. We'll also have some runner-up prizes as well, so if you're interested in entering to win, just head over to silveredgefree.com and click on the giveaway button at the top of the page, and just tell us why you'd like to win, and that's it. You're entered. We'll announce the winners on Monday, August 8th, so if you're listening to this episode before then, head over there and enter to win. That URL again is silveredgefree.com. Okay, enough of that. Let's get on with today's show. We live in some of the most divisive times in human history. Our cultural divide is wide and getting wider by the day. And the way we communicate with each other is changing, for the worse, to reflect this new reality. We're separating the world into us and them. That is, people who hold the same opinion and beliefs as us, and then those morons, misfits, and menaces that hold differing opinions from our own. But how would our health and well-being improve if we learned to communicate better? Heck, how would the world change for the better? What if we learned to communicate with ourselves, our loved ones, and even those we may violently disagree with in a loving and intentional way? What would that look like? Hello and welcome to the Over 50 Health and Wellness Show. I'm your host, Kevin English. I'm a certified personal trainer and nutrition coach, and my mission is to help you get into the best shape of your life, no matter your age, so you can show up in the second half of your life as the healthiest, strongest, most vital version of yourself. We have a great show for you today. Cynthia Kane is here, and she's going to help us improve the quality of our lives by learning to communicate more effectively. Cynthia is a best-selling author and intentional communications coach. She's the CEO of Kane Intentional Communication Institute, and she's also a certified meditation and mindfulness instructor. So without further ado, let's meet Cynthia.
I got here in a very roundabout way. It's not as though I was, 10 years old and like, I really want to help people change the way they communicate with themselves and others in the world. I used to be very passive aggressive and I was very reactionary. I just kind of slam doors, walk away. I had a really hard time being in silence. It was very uncomfortable for me. I felt like I needed to just constantly fill the space. And I didn't really enjoy my time here in the sense that I was frustrated often because it didn't seem like people understood what it was that I wanted, but I also at the same time didn't know how to clearly express what I wanted. So I was blaming a lot and very resentful that people didn't just know how to understand or take care or give or support. And I didn't know any of this at the time, right? I just kind of thought that this was like how I was engaging with the world and myself, and that this was just the way it is. And then my first love and I, we had been together about 7.5 years, and we decided, okay, this was our time. We were going to grow apart. We were going to figure out the world kind of by ourselves, and then we were going to come back together. We really believed that the universe would bring us back together, and it did 4 years later. And we met up 4 years later, and it was kind of reintroducing ourselves to one another. One of the biggest issues that we had in our relationship was communication. And we decided, okay, we're going to try this again. And then 4 months later, he passed away unexpectedly, and my whole world just bottomed out, really. And so I really wanted to feel better. I wanted other people to make that happen for me. I really wanted somebody to just come and take all of this suffering away, and it didn't happen. And I realized while I was just surrounded by tissues that I was going to have to do it on my own. And so that's where I went out and I searched to try to figure out how to enjoy my time here, how to feel better here. And what I found really was that if I wanted to change the way I interacted in the world with other people, with myself, I was going to have to change the way I communicated. And So it led me kind of on this search, and a friend of mine had suggested a meditation and writing retreat at the Shambhala Institute in New York when I lived in New York. And I was trying everything and I was like, yes, I'll go. And I went, and that weekend changed my life. That's where I learned meditation, which allowed me to feel all the emotion that I was feeling around Mauricio is his name, Mao's death. And it just allowed me to be myself and not judge myself and just meet me where I was, which was the first time in my life where I had ever been that kind to myself. And it was really changing the way that I was connecting with myself. And then I learned the elements of right speech in Buddhism, which are tell the truth, don't exaggerate, use helpful language, and don't gossip. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, this is my way out. I can do this. But then I woke up the next day and had no idea how to actually, I mean, in theory, that sounds lovely, right?
Yes. Like, yeah.
Let's be kind. Let's be honest. Let's be helpful. But then you wake up and think, how do I begin this? And so that's kind of where this lifestyle experiment became. And it started, you know, it started with myself and then it moved out to others. And so this practice of intentional communication was really born. And then I started kind of writing about it. And then I started writing books around the topic and then teaching classes around it. And then the demand for it was very high. And so it kind of all blew up from there in that regard. So others struggle with the same things that I had been struggling with. And what is such a wonderful thing about, I mean, I think about communication and most things is that it's learned behavior, right? And so it's not something we're ever really taught to do. And so we get this really amazing opportunity at any point to be able to change it. So that's how I got to here.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. And that's quite a story. And as you were telling that, I want to go back and pick a couple of things apart there. You had mentioned earlier on, you just didn't have the tools to communicate with the world or really yourself, it sounds like.
Yeah.
You expressed you had this frustration that other people didn't give you what you wanted or what you expected. And at the same time, you didn't have the tools or the communication skills to communicate that, right? To ask for what you wanted. And there was this gap, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I heard in there that I wanted to pick apart was the nonverbal communication. You had mentioned slamming doors and storming off. And that is, in fact, a form of communication, perhaps not. And maybe it's intentional, maybe it's not, but it certainly isn't a positive form in most sense of the word. So let's start with that nonverbal piece. Where does that play in intentional communication? Because I think, I don't remember the statistic, but I've read somewhere that the nonverbal makes up X percent of our actual communication. And it's a shocking amount. It's not 1 or 2%. It's a lot, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So intentional communication itself is really being able to express yourself in a kind, honest, and helpful way, right? That's deliberate, that is conscious, that is non-judgmental. So really more of a friendly way of connecting. And that is within your words, and it's also within your actions, right? And so in nonverbal communication. So the idea is that we become more aware of the fact that there's something happening within our body, right? Something has happened. We've had a conversation. Someone has said something. And there's just this flood of sensation in the body. And what happens with that sensation right now, everything happens so quickly that we feel the sensation. We automatically protect ourselves in some way. And then we act, right? Like, it's just that automatic reaction. We have those default patterns. And so whenever we're in situations where we feel threatened or we feel uncomfortable in some way, we will go to a reaction. And often our body is the first to react, right? Because everything, as you probably know, everything is in the body. Everything lives in the body, right? And so the nonverbal cues are so important because often, you know, it's that age old kind of back and forth where someone's like, how are you doing? And you're like, I'm fine, right? And they're like, well, you don't seem fine. And you're like, I'm fine, right? And your shoulders are shrugging, you're a little low in the body, your tone is off. And the truth is that you're not being congruent in that moment, right? Because if your tone is off, if your nonverbal communication is off, it's showing that there's misalignment there, right? That like what is happening on the inside for you is not truly being expressed on the outside. If I were in alignment in those moments where I slammed the doors, it would look differently. It would look like, oh, wow, here's all this sensation in the body. What am I feeling in this moment? I'm feeling stupid. I'm feeling misunderstood. I'm feeling invisible. And so then I would be able to say, you know, whoa, whoa, whoa. What you were just talking about really was hurtful to me. This is the feeling that I'm feeling, instead of avoiding it by slamming a door and making it into an exaggerated gesture, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think that probably most of my listeners here can relate to exactly what you're saying, right? I think especially in these days, right, where we have such divisiveness here, we have this big cultural divide. And
yeah.
So we have all of these triggering topics around us, right, in the politics and very everything much. Else that's going on in the world. And you had described that very well, I think, when you talked about in our bodies, when we hear something that we maybe violently disagree with or doesn't jive with our current worldview, that first reaction is this gut reaction, right? And by that, yeah. I mean this visceral body reaction. And there's these biological chemical things happening, mm-hmm. right? We're releasing cortisol. But you had said we put up this wall. And I think that that's the most common reaction when we hear something that really disagrees with us, right? And so our communication skills at that point have completely broken down. Once that wall goes up and you can see it, I mean, mm-hmm. it is, unless yeah. somebody's a very, very good actor, you can see when that wall goes up. And right then and there, then the communication changes from being productive, I suspect, to being very unproductive, because yeah. now my wall's up and, well, wait a minute, I'm right. No, no, no. You're not only are you wrong, but you're perhaps you're even evil. I don't know, but we're at completely different odds here. And it seems to me that the communication then has just completely disintegrated. What are some strategies for when we hear something that triggers us or that gives us that visceral reaction, or when we feel that wall going up, mm-hmm. what are some strategies we can use to back up and say, okay, wait a minute, why am I feeling this? What am I feeling? And in that moment when things are very emotional, how can we be intentional with our communication in that sort of situation?
Yeah. So it is, I mean, you are correct, right? The moment that wall goes up, it's just very difficult to hear anything. All we hear is ourselves in that right. moment, right? And so one of the, you know, the best practices I believe in is first that just awareness that it's happening. So the awareness that there is a wall, the being very honest with ourselves to say, I am shutting down right now. I am not open to any type of opinion right now that is not my own. And and this isn't something that you're necessarily saying to the other person. This is something that you're saying to yourself, right? So in that moment, you are aware, oh, there's my wall. My wall's up. I see my wall, right? It's, you know, this high. It's this color. It has this shape. You know, maybe it's a fence. Maybe it's, you know, one of the pointy fences. Maybe it's a wire fence. But you really start to understand, okay, what is my fence? Where does it exist, right? How high is it right now? So you bring awareness to what's happening, and then you talk to yourself in the moment. So usually what happens is the walls come up and our focus is on the other person, blaming the other person right away. I can't believe they think this. Why in the world are they talking to me about this right now? Don't they understand that I know I've done research, I've done all the things, right? And so that's where we go automatically. So we want to be able to see, okay, there I am. That's okay. No big thing. Now I'm just going to bring the attention back, talk to myself differently here. So in that moment, to be able to say, you're upset right now. You're feeling, you know, attacked right now. It's okay. We've got this. What are your feet doing? What are your hands doing? What's your belly doing? Take a breath and soften, right? You can even just say the word soften to yourself in that moment, and your body listens, right? So your body listens to your words. So when you say soften, your body softens, and then you're able to see. And then you can see and you can say, okay, how can I be helpful to this person right now? Can I see this person with friendly eyes right now? Is this a conversation that is you know, moving into more hurtful territory, or can I change that so it becomes helpful, right? Do I need to leave the situation? Do I need to leave the conversation? So really what you're trying to do in that moment is to access yourself. Because like you were mentioning before, right, the cortisol is pumping. So you're in that fight, flight, freeze moment. So our work in that moment is to find a way to calm our body so that our body feels that it's safe. And one of the best ways to do that is through touch and through talk. So even when you're telling yourself, soften, like you can just, you know, squeeze your fist. You can kind of pat your leg. You can maybe rub your heart. Right. You just find a way to allow your body to know that it's safe to listen or to leave, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Giving yourself that grace and that space to soften and to just to recognize that there's a wall. And then, okay, is this a conversation that I should continue or should I leave?
Right.
Is this going to just become more hurtful both to myself and the other person? Mm-hmm. But I think that that's obviously much easier said than done, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know myself, I've lately, for example, let's say my wife says something and it triggers me and all of a sudden I'm on the defense and I can immediately see my wall go up.
Yeah.
And for me, the best thing to do is to check out for a minute. Mm-hmm. Like you said, take those breaths. And I hadn't thought of it as softening, but softening. And then really exploring, okay, what is it about that, and this is actually a new journey for me, a new place in my journey, is really trying to examine, okay, what about that statement upset me in that moment? And very, very often what I find is it's something that I need to work on.
Yes.
But that's not my initial reaction. My initial reaction is, holy moly, you're you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right. But, everybody can see that, right? And that's not always the case. So, all right, so first things first, when we find ourselves in those situations, is just recognizing that we're putting up a wall. I mm-hmm. love the way that you say to create some imagery around that. What does your wall look like? I hadn't thought about that. Is it a fence with razor wire?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a brick wall like the guy behind you right there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to back up kind of to your original story again and pick apart a little bit more. You had mentioned that really the catalyst for you was this weekend retreat, this meditation retreat. It sounds like that obviously was very, very impactful for you. And that was kind of the turning point in your life. And you had briefly mentioned in there, we had talked a little bit about the elements of right speech in Buddhism. Talk to us a little bit about the role of Buddhism or spirituality in your journey and its impact on where you are today with communication.
So I didn't really know much about Buddhism when I went that weekend. I mean, just a little bit from what I had learned in college, maybe. And what I really took to was this idea that I had everything within me to move myself out of suffering. So it was this idea that there was nothing wrong with me. I was not broken. I did not need to be fixed. All I needed was to allow myself to be in whatever state that I was in. Was that possible? Was it possible for me to feel insecure and anger and jealousy and allow that to be okay? Was it possible for me to have so much fear and anxiety and become friends with it? Could I become friends with myself? Basically, that was what I was learning how to do through meditation. And what it impacted for me was the way that I started to see myself. I started to see myself really with more of a loving eyes. And I wasn't as judgmental anymore. I used to beat myself up for everything. And it just gradually became less and less. Because what happens in meditation, and do you meditate?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Okay. So you know that point in meditation where you have like all these thoughts that are there. And it's not to get rid of the thoughts, but it's really just, okay, I'm just watching my thoughts. I'm just kind of observing. And then I'm noticing, oh, wow, okay, I'm really stuck in one. Like, I'm really over here. And so there's that beautiful moment where you get to be like, oh, hey, I'm distracted. Thanks so much for sharing. I'm just going to come back to, you know, my attention on my breath or my body or wherever my attention is. And that moment is so critical because for me in the beginning, that space was really neat. It was like, what are you doing? You don't know how to do this. Stop it. Come back, right? Like it was like very drill sergeant like. And what I learned through that process was to be like, oh, it's fine, babe. You've got this. You're a good girl. Like you just come back. It's not that big of a deal, right? And by doing that, that then translated off of the cushion, so to speak, into day-to-day life. And so soon what ended up becoming this, you know, practice I was doing on my cushion, really what I started to notice in my interactions with myself and with other people was my practice. And so the way for meditation and communication, I truly believe meditation is the glue, right? Meditation is what makes it so that we can become more responsive. We can become less reactive, right? So that we have that gap. You know, people talk about, well, just pause, and then say something. And you're like, great. How in the world do you pause? The practice of meditation helps with that space. And so it really reflects, you know, when we're in conversation and we're talking to someone and we get distracted, it's like, oh, I'm distracted. Thanks so much. I'm just going to come back to the person that I'm talking to, what they're saying, the present moment. I'm going to just access this place where I can allow things to be as they are. If they don't feel right, I can feel the sensation of it. I'm not going to label it good or bad. I'm just going to feel the sensation. And then I can come back to the person and I can talk to them about, you know, after processing, like what you were talking about before, I can actually speak, right?
So yeah, so I think that what you're describing there, it, certainly in my own practice, and it was through a professor in college that actually introduced me to meditation at a time when it was critical for me. So it was the right time and the right place. And I've off and on my entire life had some sort of a meditation practice. And I find that, like you're describing, it's almost this detachment from my thoughts, right? So I'm looking at my thoughts almost as a third person observer and just allowing them to be. And I love the way you talk about self-love and grace and say, okay, what am I feeling? Oh, I'm feeling insecure. I'm feeling angry. And why am I that way? Oh, I'm that way for this and this reason, which maybe aren't very pretty, but just allowing that and accepting that without judgment is a lot of the power of meditation. Now, folks out there listening who don't have a meditation or maybe a prayer practice or something similar, journaling practice, may think that sounds a little woo-woo. And you had mentioned on the cushion, they're probably thinking that you're spending hours at a time just om. But really a meditation practice doesn't, especially starting out, probably shouldn't be hours on a mat, right? No. We're talking, what, 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
First thing in the morning would be a fantastic starting place. So talk to us a little bit to somebody who's listening to this and thinking, okay, what you're describing is the human experience, right? Basically, I'd like to tap into some of this. How would we get started practically putting a meditation practice in place?
Yeah. So I often suggest to people to begin in the morning, and like you wake up, you go to the bathroom, you brush your teeth, you come back, and just beginning by taking 5 long, slow, deep breaths in the morning, you will start to feel more centered, and it will lead you to want to sit. Meaning, when I say sit, I mean sit for 5 minutes and put your attention on something, right? The meditation work that we do is really specific to communication. So the meditation practices are, you know, to be able to feel more compassion for yourself or compassion for others, or when you have difficult conversations and things of that sort. Though I really believe that 5 long, slow, deep breaths, you will be surprised at how long that truly takes. One inhale. That's one breath. And just even doing that, you will feel relaxation happen in the body, and you will start to engage with your world very differently just from 5 long, slow, deep breaths in the morning, I believe.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. And certainly that breathing that you're describing is a fantastic way to start each day. It's also useful throughout the day. So I have a breathing practice similar to that, right? And then basically the idea is we're taking this deep belly breath running through the diaphragm. Mm. Maybe hold it for a second or two. And then that long, slow exhalation, that exhalation being longer than that inhalation, moves us from this sympathetic to parasympathetic state. So from that fight or flight state that you're probably feeling very often throughout our days with this chronic stress most of us are experiencing, into more that rest and digest. And it's your biology. It really can have an impact. So throughout the day, as I find myself in these stressful situations, I'll just take the 30, 60, 90 seconds to have a cycle of deep breathing. And it's almost a miracle, right?
It really is.
So yeah, folks that are interested in meditation, well, actually, before I move on, let me just ask a question. There's a ton of apps in this space now, BrainFM and these other, there's a lot of meditation apps. Is there value in some sort of a guided meditation for folks getting started?
I believe there is. I think when you're first starting out with meditation, being guided is really great. So much of what happens when we first start meditating is wondering if we're doing it right. And just there might be a lot of doubt and insecurity and wondering, like, how much time do I have left? And, you know, all the things. So it's nice to have a guide because you can give that responsibility over to someone else. And then there is a point, I think, that some will get to where they want to then be led by themselves. And then they become their guide. But I think that just getting started doing guided meditations is the way to go. The other, you know, when you were talking to about just kind of getting started, the other thing people can do too is just do a really quick body scan so they can close their eyes, just like a 30-second body scan, right? Just closing their eyes and going from the top of the head to like throughout the body to the feet and just seeing about kind of softening or relaxing those areas of the body. Even just closing your eyes for just a second throughout the day and then opening them, right? That's a meditative state too. Anything that brings you what you were talking about into that, you know, the parasympathetic, the rest and digest is really helpful.
Yeah. And we've talked about this on the show in the past and past episodes, but one of the things that I've noticed is when I'm consistently doing a prayer and meditation practice, and even if that's only 5 minutes in the morning, it actually, Cynthia, you've already talked about this, but it carries over into all areas in my life. But I've noticed things like my HRV, which is heart rate variability, improves. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that my REM and deep sleep cycles are improved when it's consistently meditating versus when I'm not. So these things have some very real effects on us, especially those of us that are aging. Mm-hmm. That are looking to optimize our health, right? As opposed to just being not sick, we want to have optimal health and vitality. And certainly that's what this show champions. So I feel like the meditation it's that magic bullet, so to speak, right? And it gets missed a lot. Well, I want to go back because you had talked about accepting yourself where you are, accepting the way you're feeling. And you briefly touched on that self-love and self-acceptance. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about just dealing with negative self-talk. Because I think most of us have this experience where we will say things to ourselves inwardly that we would never, ever, ever say to even a stranger, let alone another loved one. Talk to us about negative self-talk and maybe some strategies for dealing with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So negative self-talk, I think affects everybody, right?
So many
people, and it truly is the one piece that prevents us from enjoying our time here, really. So often we go to the negative, right? There's like the negativity bias. And so usually that's just a normal behavior for most of us, right? You could have somebody give you 25 positive comments and then there's one negative and you will just focus directly on the negative and then you go and you beat yourself up and then suddenly you're the worst person in the world. So a way for us to kind of quiet the negative self-talk won't ever go away. It will get louder the more you push it away. So our work, again, is to be able to see that it's happening. So the awareness piece is really important to start to notice where it comes most often, right? Is it happening in stressful times? Is it happening with certain people that you're with? Is it happening when you look in the mirror? Is it happening, right, when you open the refrigerator? Wherever it happens, you want to begin to become really familiar with the talk itself because you will likely be saying the same things over and over and over again every single day. It's the same thing that you're saying. So we just want to start to get familiar with the language first. And then once you are seeing it more, then you get to be like, oh, hey, thanks so much for sharing.
Yeah.
Right? Thanks so much for sharing. But, you know, in this moment, I want to go a different direction. Right? In this moment, I want to think about, you know, what do I want to feel like instead? And then what's the next step I can take to feel that way? Right? Or it's being able to just see that in that moment, we're feeling less than in some way. And for us to be able to just the physical activity of even just putting your arms around yourself and being like, we've got this. It's okay. Like, we're okay. Right? And to know that we can say, you know, even though I'm feeling this right now, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Like, even though I'm upset at myself right now, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. And no matter how many times you have to say that, you can say it until kind of the charge is gone, right? But it really, it's not about becoming your best friend in the moment and switching things to a positive and affirming things. It really is, okay, we're feeling upset right now about something and we're feeling like we failed at this, or we're feeling like we're never going to get to the goal that we have for ourselves. And we can just notice that that's the feeling that we feel. And I can be like, okay, thanks for sharing. I want to feel something different right now. What can I feel, right? How do I want to feel differently right now? Or we can give ourselves a hug, right? But it really is more around allowing ourselves to change, right? Because the negative self-talk, all it does is it keeps us the same. It won't let us move. It won't let us grow, right? And so once we are able to see, okay, that's what this is doing. This is just keeping me where I am. This is keeping me stuck in the same place. And really my want, my desire is to be in a different place. It's like, okay, well, how can I tap into that different place, right? How can I be able to say, okay, right now I'm kind of like playing the victim. I want to move into feeling like more confident. Okay. So then that means I need to be talking to myself in this way, or this means I need to start doing these types of things, right? So it's a little bit of that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. That's very insightful, because I think that again is a part of the human experience. And you had mentioned it as a negativity bias, and you're absolutely right. Somebody can compliment us 25 times and we get that one, what we perceive as an insult, or it doesn't even have to be that. We're always looking for negative things, it seems. Yeah. And just being aware of the environment where that happens, being aware of what it is you're feeling and acknowledging it, right? And then that, I love how you described that. What did you say? To deeply and completely love yourself, maybe even give yourself a self-hug. But I hadn't really thought about that negative self-talk keeping us where we are, but it certainly does. It's very hard to grow when you're telling yourself these horrible things, right? I'm not good enough, or I'm, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that a lot of that, what you're referring to then, is this sort of this mind shift saying, okay, where do I want, who do I want to be? What do I want to be feeling? And we've had some past guests that have described this very eloquently as becoming the person you want to be before you're actually that person. Mm. So let's say, you know, you're to come into my world nutritionally, let's say that you want to lose this weight, you want to be 20 pounds lighter, right? Mm-hmm. Well, become that person before you even start researching your diet or what exercises you're going to do or what lifestyle changes you're going to make. Become that person. Okay, what would that person look like? What would that person do day to day? What would that person think? What would that person feel?
Yeah.
And I had a guest in the past that referred to that as spiraling up, right? We all know a downward spiral. And like this is more that positive upward spiral, where these new thoughts that you are introducing are actually pulling yourself to that desired state. Like you would say, well, I'm here and I'm stuck here by these limiting negative thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. That's, I think that's very insightful and something that we can all identify with and maybe make some real changes right away. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to you when it comes to intentional communication is the role of listening. So obviously communication, when you say, oh, intentional communication, okay, being very clear and direct mm-hmm. and honest and loving with my words and maybe practicing those, we had mentioned the elements of right speech. Mm-hmm. But what about the other side of that? How important is listening and maybe intentional listening for communication?
Yeah, it's extremely important. So when you're first really learning this work, listening is the beginning, right? It's first listening to yourself and then it's listening to others. So the listening to yourself piece is really what we've been talking about, the sensation in the body that comes in those moments that have you feeling triggered, the way that you're connecting with yourself. Because if we're not connecting to ourselves in a kind, honest, and helpful way, then it's really not possible for us to connect with others in that way, right? And so first we begin listening there. And then when we move to listening to others, it's really, it's moving into this space of meeting people where they're at. So for them to become kind of just like volleys of information, right? The way through is to be able to connect with people in a way that you're being helpful, right? So you're there to be able to be supportive as opposed to like take away. Because the purpose mm-hmm. of this communication is to reduce your suffering and that of others. Suffering is a big word, but really suffering, really what it just means here is like discomfort, right? Dis-ease. So if you're in a conversation and, you know, someone is sharing something with you about an experience that they had, often our one is to just jump in and help them through it, or to jump in and kind of get them to, you know, next week, even though they might be experiencing heartache right now. And that's not really helpful for the person. So in terms of listening, what we're listening for is, what does this person need from us right now? So it requires us to stand back. It requires us to like take a position of just, let me sit next to this person, as opposed to, right, let me try in this situation. Does that make sense?
It does. And you said a couple of things there that I find fascinating. One is, of course, I hadn't thought about it, but listening skill starts with listening to self and then to listening to others. And I think the way you're describing that is, we're listening and we want to be empathetic, right? You'd, I think, referred to that several times throughout the day, but as opposed to just wanting to convey information or to get something from somewhere. And then you said something I thought was very interesting. You said the purpose of this communication is to reduce suffering. And I think that may take many of the people hearing that aback a little bit and say, oh, the intention. So do you mind talking a little bit more about that? Because mm-hmm. when you said that, my eyebrows shot up a little bit. I'm thinking, oh, I hadn't really thought about it. And certainly the world would be a better place if we all communicated mm-hmm. with this idea of reducing suffering, right?
Yeah. So often when we think of the purpose of communication, we think of relaying information, we think of sharing, we think of, you know, expressing ourselves, or some people will think of getting their point across, right, and things of that sort. Truly, though, I mean, when we look at, if we were to kind of go with a microscope and look at each of those and you filter them through the elements of right speech, they don't really work, right? Because most of them are exaggerated states. Most of them aren't using helpful language. It's more like hurtful language to drive through a situation, to get somebody to listen, to get somebody to understand, to get somebody to think differently. And so our filter really makes it so that we're really looking to see, okay, if I'm in a conversation, let's say with my partner, and they say something to me and I get triggered and I slam the door and I walk away, that causes suffering. That causes suffering for me because I'm angry and I'm not expressing it and I'm just holding it in and I don't know how to talk to it. And then it causes suffering for my partner because my partner has no idea what's going on. And so now they are uncomfortable and they are feeling threatened and their stress levels have risen too. If we take that same situation and, you know, your partner says something and instead you can feel the sensation in the body, you're like, wow, I'm upset right now. And you can feel all of it. And almost it's like you move it to the side so that you can access the moment. And then you say, that was really hurtful to me. Can we talk about it? Or, you know, when you said that, I felt misunderstood. The next time you want to share with me how to cut bread, I'd appreciate it if, you know, you would ask me if I need guidance first, right? Like, so, and then in that moment, everything's clear. No, there's no suffering. And so it reduces our own suffering and that of someone else's. So even just coming to any conversation with that in mind, it changes the way that you communicate, right? It changes how you use your language. You become way more conscious of the other person and way more conscious of yourself as well, right? You know, you can think you want to say something and share something, but is it, we often run it through, like, is it helpful? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And is it honest? And sometimes people are like, well, it's honest. And it's like, well, but it's not kind or helpful. Sometimes it's kind, but it's not honest. Sometimes it's, you know, honest, but it's not helpful. So, and it's not that these things also happen right in the moment. Before all this, where you're just thinking about it, and it's just a period of digestion for what you're learning to kind of sink in, and then soon you start to see it and you start to pay more attention to it.
Okay, so I love that thought of filtering our communication. Is it helpful? Is it necessary? Is it kind? Is it honest? And certainly, again, we talked about at the top of the show, this world could use a lot more of these kind of communication skills right now, because we see so much communication that's the exact opposite, right?
Yeah.
And it's not to blame people. It's just that we're in this state, and I think just we're not as self-aware of the importance of communication, how our communication is coming across, and we're using communication more as a shield or a weapon than we are, you know, is it kind, is it necessary, is it helpful, is it honest? Okay. So, Cynthia, before we wrap up here, one other thing I wanted to ask you, because we've talked a lot about communication, intentional communication, and self-love and acceptance, things of that nature. So, as we start to put these things into practice and we start to practice intentional communication, how do these things spill over into other aspects of our lives outside of just, you know, meditating and thinking about how I communicate with people?
Yeah. I mean, it changes. Well, first it changes your relationships, right? So, and it changes your relationships with your partner, with your children, at work, because what you are learning to do is you're learning really what is okay for you and what is not okay for you in a lot of ways, right? And so you also learn then how to talk to those things. So you begin to change how you're connecting. There's less fighting. There's less, you know, tension. There's way more. There might not be understanding, but there's respect. You may not understand, someone might not understand what you're saying, but they respect what you're saying, right? Because you're starting to communicate in a way that other people can actually hear you. And so you truly begin to have more conversations, and you become more confident because you're seeing how the way that you're showing up is changing your moves, right? It's changing how people respond to you. And it changes your relationships to people. It changes your relationship to yourself, because you start to have so much more energy and space, because you start to see more of that which is helpful, right? So your attention shifts. Your attention shifts from what's not working, what this person isn't doing, what this person isn't saying, what I'm not doing, what I should be doing, right? And you move into wanting to surround yourself by that which is moving you forward. So you become somebody who moves yourself forward. The relationships that you have are relationships that help you move forward or feel like you're going in that upward spiral like you were talking to. But then it also changes your relationship to, it changes your relationship to your body. It changes your relationship to food. It changes your relationship to money, because you start to become way more conscious of how you are engaging in the world, right? You become way more intentional with what you're putting into your mouth. You become more intentional with the types of exercise you choose. Right. For me, I can say personally, when I was in my 20s, the type of exercise I was doing in my 20s, I tried to do when I was in my 40s, right? But I tried to do it and it totally burned my whole body out. And so I was just not being intentional with the way that I was choosing how to work out because I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't listening to my body. I wasn't. So it's like you use it in every area of your life. Once you start to unpack it all, it ripples out.
Yeah. And I thank you for sharing that. And I see that as you were talking through communication and, you know, coming into this interview, obviously I did a little bit of background on you. So I suspect we might go down this path a little bit, but my thoughts about effective communications, maybe before this conversation would have been like, well, you know, I want to be able to express myself clearly and concisely. And of course, listen back would be important as well. But I wasn't really expecting where we went with, you know, especially the acceptance and the life-changing capabilities of this intentional communication that you're talking about. Because you're talking about this moving into our relationship with ourselves, our relationship with others, but also things like finances and our life and our quality of life, our physical health. And that's not immediately obvious, but I think that the path that we took to get here kind of shines a light on how that could certainly be to help us really move forward, right? Mm-hmm. And to better ourselves. So thank you again for sharing that. So Cynthia, as we're wrapping up here, what's next for you? What do you have on the horizon?
Well, on the horizon, so I'm working on a new book, potentially. We're almost there. So that's exciting. And right now we are going to be opening up our membership in August. And the membership is really around intentional communication guidance, where we meet weekly and there's meditation and there's daily or weekly communication intention set. And it's really a time to learn how to do this work, right? So to come to be able to say, these are the things that I'm experiencing. This is what's going on communication-wise. Within these areas, what are practices that I could use? How can I move myself through? And to really be able to bring the theory down to the ground. Because so much of this in theory sounds great, but it's possible to implement. It's possible to practice. And, you know, we've helped over like 60,000 people now implement this practice. So it works.
Yeah. Okay, great. And we haven't mentioned your books yet, but you have How to Communicate Like a Buddhist, Talk to Yourself Like a Buddhist, How to Meditate Like a Buddhist. Yeah. This next book going to be in that vein, or is this something completely different?
It's a little different.
A little different. Okay, fair enough. We'll be looking forward to that. And then you had mentioned this membership you're opening. I know you work a lot with corporations. Is this something that just my audience, if they're interested, just as individual people could participate in?
Yes. So this is 100% for individuals, and it's a monthly membership. You can join, you can cancel at any time. It's very easy.
Right. Well, in that case, let's segue right into how can people connect with you? What's the best way for folks to get in touch with you, maybe learn more about this, your upcoming sessions here?
Yeah. So you can find me at CynthiaKane.com, or you can find me on Instagram at CYKane1. And there's also, you know, the Institute website, which is IntentionalCommunicationInstitute.com.
Great. And folks, I will put all of that into the show notes. You can find that there. And that's www. And Cynthia Kane is CYNTHIAKANE. So you can Google that or just go to CynthiaKane.com, get all that information there. But I'll put your Instagram and your Facebook and YouTube, etc. All of that will be in the show notes here. Well, Cynthia, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, sharing your personal journey with us and all of your passion and your love and your wisdom with us. And I just wish you all the best in all your future endeavors. The world needs more of what you have right now, I feel like.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And thank you for your time. I really loved being with you.
Okay, folks, that's our show for this week. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I want to let you know that we have other free resources over at silveredgefree.com. There you'll find free guides with our top tips on nutrition, exercise, and healthy lifestyle. So feel free to head over there and download anything that looks useful to you and your health and wellness journey. I also want to let you know that you can find all the links to the resources we discussed in this episode over at silveredgefitness.com/episode132, and you can continue the conversation over there as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts and comments on today's show.
I really appreciate you spending your time with me today. And until next time, stay strong.